Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and at newspress.com. We rebroadcast Sundays on A2Zen.fm at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. Now, this program, of course, is not at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. It is actually 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and that is due to some constraints and so forth with the radio station, but we can work with that. We enjoy the 7 p.m. time slot from time to time. Works out just fine for us, and we certainly hope that you will avail yourself of the archives that we have of all of our guests. I have some exciting guests coming up in the coming weeks and months, and 2013 is also going to be a great year for us as well in terms of the various guests that we have coming on the program. So please take time to check out our guests, their websites. As you notice, we don't have a lot of information about our guests other than the link. As I've said before, I don't like reinventing the wheel. It's been done. And so we send you to our guests to check out that information. It's been an interesting week for all of us, I'm sure, as weather's changing a little bit. And of course, we have all kinds of things going on the national as well as international fronts. How are things going on the local level? Well, we're going to find out a little bit about that and how those elements are affecting the national and international energy, if you will. Today, our guest in studio, and it's very nice. I always enjoy having guests in studio. My guest is a holistic healer, and her name is Wendy McKenna. And she is connected with, I think, a pretty terrific organization that is located here on the Central Coast, the Global Alliance for Balance and Healing. It is a nonprofit, and you can go to globalalliance.ws. That's a new one on me. They also have a toll-free number of 888-567-3800. That's 888-567-3800. Wendy, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and coming into studio with us.
Thank you for the invitation, Richard. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
I came across the information about you and the Global Alliance through another gal, I think it was Elizabeth Sullivan.
Oh, yes, probably in relationship to our announcements for the Wisdom Series, which is a fundraising platform that we held this year in 2012 and plan to hold it again next year in 2013.
I love the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm constantly referring to the ancient wisdom teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from so many points of view, so many different places on the planet. I've, of course, focused an awful lot, of course, on the Eastern. I know that there's Native American. I know that there are different indigenous peoples up and down the Americas, North America, Central, South America, in Africa, Asia, the major continents and so forth. And they all seem to be speaking the same thing, though. And that's what's really profound, is that they've had no contact with one another physically, energetically maybe, but not physically. And it's like when I talk with people about these kinds of things and they say, well, you know, your people that you have on your show, they're always saying the same thing. We're all one and we're all spirit and we're all doing this and we're all doing that. You know, it's so boring. And I say, but don't you think maybe there's a point there? There's a strand that's running through everybody's conversation, everybody's teachings that's saying the same thing. And the Global Alliance that you're involved with is talking about balance and healing. And it seems as though that's what we're trying to I'm not sure if the word equilibrium is the right word to use or not.
Certainly it is.
And we're all struggling to try to find our own personal equilibrium as well as our communities, our society, our civilizations, and our species of man is trying to find its equilibrium. And it's been a real struggle in the last, I'm going to say in the last 40, 50 years, if not in the last 10.
Oh, indeed. I would agree with you, Richard. I'd say my entire life of 54 years in this life is I've witnessed a lot of struggle in many others and experienced it personally myself. I think it helps to remind ourselves that even the struggles bring us great learning. an insight about perhaps what we might not choose to do or participate with in the future. So we learn, yeah. We learn as we move through our experiences. Global Alliance for Balance and Healing was birthed basically from guidance and insight that spoke to a coming need, a very extreme need for balance in the world. And so when I finally felt serious enough about starting the organization, I had no idea of the demand there would be for our service. Prior to 11 years ago when Global Alliance incepted, I had been providing a volunteer service for about 28 years prior to that by myself, just solo. And I would travel to different communities in the States, as well as Western Europe and Canada and parts of South America to volunteer my service. And there would be hosts in those or those communities that would invite me. And they were either colleagues or friends or people that had heard about me through others that had received my service. And my service has always been a service of balance. My private services through my holistic healing practice really do teach people how to take care of themselves and how to stay balanced. But the greater theme of balance really could not be addressed cohesively enough or comprehensively enough until I started the Global Alliance for Balance and Healing. And what incepted was to develop a team of healers that would help me, along with any others, voluntarily provide a service of balance, energetic balance, so that humanity could learn about what energetic balance is and how that they could maintain it. And now, 11 years post starting Global Alliance, we serve well over 500 people a month just in San Luis Obispo City alone with our free service. And we also travel and provide other clinics on a monthly basis and quarterly basis elsewhere throughout the U.S., primarily the Western U.S., where we can afford to drive to. We don't fly much in the past 7 years since the economic decline because really charities aren't receiving the benefits and support that they did from our mainstream corporations and whatnot in the past. Our service is multifaceted. And so when we talk about balance, we do. We speak of equilibrium. We speak of being stabilized, being grounded in a manner of speaking or centered or focused on whatever is occurring in the now to help people recognize the import of being present with what's occurring so that we don't deprive ourselves of wonderful experiences rather than reflecting continually upon the past and what has occurred. So equilibrium is really threatened right now. Quite literally all the way down to the axis of our planet and the way it's currently positioned.
Now, I know that science is telling us that we've been through a number of these cycles. Mm-hmm. And quite literally for upwards of 25,000 years.
Kind of hard to understand how they'd know that, isn't it?
Well, and it is, and yet there are scientists who, you know, the ice core samples that they mm-hmm. dredge up from the north and south poles of the planet, kind of give them information and so forth, and even geological core samples. I know that they do the same kind of thing mm-hmm. that are telling stories about the process that the Earth itself alone has gone through, the changes, which raises just a myriad of questions. But again, that's kind of going to what you were just talking about in terms of, okay, that's all fine, well, and good, but we're in the here and the now. This is what mm-hmm. this is where we are. We're not back there.
Right.
Whether it's 25,000 years, 25 years, or 5 years, it doesn't matter anymore because that's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And people are looking to the future for something better, which probably is no more productive than looking to the past and saying, well, look at the problems and so forth and so on.
I would wager that most of us fell prey to reflection upon the past in order to prepare for our future just from our society and the way that we've been conditioned. Some of our conditioning has been helpful. But as I'm sure you've noticed, Richard, once you reach a certain point in your life, you do reflect back and you notice that much of the conditioning we've been exposed to in the past was pertinent only to that moment of experience and really didn't play out much into the future until we've arrived at this point. And here we are in the 21st century of humanity, at least the genome that we are now. And we're in 2012, a time that's been prophesized from many different sources, not just metaphysics and spirituality, but science as well. And definitely our indigenous cultures and Aboriginal cultures all over the world have prophesized this time as a great change. The Hopi tradition, of which there are many other indigenous traditions, speak of how it is that 2012 would be the inception or the threshold we would cross to where the world as we know it would cease to exist. And I believe that the term knowing is a real key in that particular part of their prophecy, because I believe that whatever is occurring with the earth, she's obviously undergoing changes, just as the animal kingdom and the plant kingdoms do continually. We can look back 50 years and remember certain animals that were more plentiful on the earth than they are now, if they even exist, because of perhaps extinction or something else that might have caused them to be extinct unnaturally. And so we know that different life forms on Earth change and they mutate and they evolve and they are maybe usurped by new life forms at certain points. Well, we have no control over any of that. But what we do have control over is how we transmit our energetic transmissions. And what we teach people through our organization and what I teach people as an individual healer is that once you can understand the fundamental concepts of energetics and recognize that everything that we think and feel and do and say is an energy transmission, and once it's been transmitted, it's transmitted. We've sent it out into the ethers.
You can't take it back.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we have no idea of what destination it will eventually reach. But from what I've learned in my experience is that all energy transmissions then do become eternal, so that we might assign a destination to it if we're thinking about a specific person, for instance. But yet that transmission will continue to transmit because there is no reason for the energy to cease to exist. Everything in our world of existence is vibrating particles of energy. So are we. And they're always mobilized and never static. They're always moving. So those transmissions that we transmit out continue to be living organisms in and unto themselves, thus thought forms, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so the thought forms we create are plentiful, but we need to be focused in the now and present moment so that we can begin to create new thought forms of which we would have never fathomed in the past.
We are where we are today due to the choices that we have made in the past.
I agree with you.
Where do we want to be tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be based upon where we want to be tomorrow is going to be based upon the choices that we make today.
That's so true.
And as many of my guests, and I've shared this with you as well, Greg Braden in particular, talk about making new choices, different choices that are outside the nine dots or outside the box. And unfortunately, when it comes to our various institutions that have been around for, in some cases, decades, in some cases, centuries, they're still choosing the old choices.
Mm-hmm.
And Einstein, of course, is quoted as saying that the challenges or problems, however you want to phrase that, of today cannot be solved or met by the same consciousness that created them. And unfortunately, a lot of the people who are in those institutions today are wanting to do just that.
Yeah, it really appears to be a mad scramble to hold on to what was.
Yeah.
I call it the white-knuckled grip of the patriarchy.
Ah.
And my statement is not sexist at all, because I do believe that we need a good balance of both genders on this planet, just as the other life forms do that are, you know, sexual life forms and not asexual. And the idea would be that everything that was proved to have some semblance of security. So many members of the human race are holding on to that was with a white-knuckled grip in order to maintain their semblance of security and stability in their life without realizing just how many centuries, generations, or beyond we've perpetuated these patterns of behavior. So here we are crossing a threshold into what's known as the Golden Age. It's been 30,000 years, apparently, according to Aristotle, whom I reflect back upon because I really feel inspired by his writings about this time. And we're crossing a threshold into a time where perhaps there is a potential for us to dream a new dream, think a new thought, or begin to schedule a new illusion, if depending on how you look at our existence.
Yeah.
And it's time for us to be very creative rather than pulling from all of the old resources that we've utilized over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so thinking anew is challenging. There are some personalities that just don't have maybe the wherewithal or the interest to do that.
I've found it interesting, especially over the last 4 years and dealing with the economic institution, both nationally and globally, that when people would, and especially with, say, the capitalist system, they would talk about, oh, we've got to bail that company out. We've got – because here's what's going to happen if we don't. And so they went ahead and did this, and
– You mean we did with our tax dollars.
We did with our tax dollars. They did it with our tax dollars.
Right.
In a manner of speaking, although, you know, it's all – we're all connected in that
That's
respect.
That's right.
And I thought, well, wait a minute. You don't really know what's going to happen. And I always thought the rule of the system was a survival of the strongest. And that if you, as a business owner, no matter how big or small your business is, make a mistake, you made a mistake. And if it cost you your business, then it cost you your business. There was going to be nobody there with a safety net or a life raft to save you and your company. That was the process of the system. Those were the rules. In the last 4 years, those rules have been violated.
No different from reworking our Constitution every time it's convenient for a politician with enough authority to do so.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I sit here going, well, then it's not the system that you say that it is.
Right.
It's not the institution that is so sacred and sacrosanct that and it's the best in the world. And that's another a phrase that I hear quite often, and people will even comment to me, oh, it's the best system in the world, or it's we're the greatest country in the world. And I respond, how do you know this? Have you lived anywhere else on the planet for any length of time under any other system? And you know this for a fact. And many times, this is not from immigrants. This is not from people who emigrated here in the last 40 or 50 years who became American citizens. This is from citizens who have generation after generation born here, and they've never lived anywhere else.
There you go.
What do you have to compare it with? Because isn't that the whole process of contrast and comparison? With education, we do the same thing.
Certainly.
I thought that was the process of education, where you go out and you – you try to learn everything you can about the various aspects of whatever it is that you want to know. And then you have this rounded process in your own mind, and you learn how to logically process things, problem solve, you know, outside the nine dots. But again, it goes back to the whole issue of the same consciousness that created the problems or the challenges cannot be used to solve them.
Correct.
So how do we go about, and this is, maybe this is now going to become the $64 million or trillion-dollar question. How do we go about the process, not just of balancing and healing ourselves, but how do we go about the process of actually and even consciously raising our consciousness, our awareness, our understanding to a place where we can maybe even help others to do the same? Because my understanding with conversations I've had on this very program is that, for example, Jacques Fresco and the Venus Project, I'm not sure if you're familiar.
I am.
In the interview, I asked him about if his vision would come about in his and my lifetime. He says, probably not in mine and most likely not in yours. And the reason was because man's consciousness is not to the level where he could live the way that these models, these visions require.
Sure. You know, this is a real popular question, and there are many ways to approach it. But the bottom line, as you mentioned earlier, you know, there are teachings. There have been what we call mystery schools in the past, and sacred scripts and sacred lessons and teachings. And as you explore them, of which I have explored many throughout this lifetime, There is a core teaching that resides within the foundation of all of those different philosophies or forms of schools or learning institutions. And the common platform is basically what we call the golden rule. And that would be that we would want to be treated by others in a way that is respectful and accepting and truly loving and caring. So the idea would be that first we have to lighten up. And to lighten up, it can be defined in many ways. It can be literal. It can be metaphorical, depending on, you know, what you're looking at in your lifestyle. But, you know, how do we raise our vibration specifically? Well, we start thinking more with a lighter frame of reference. People can't lighten up when they're not feeling good. And so one thing that is it's proving to be very apparent, and it's all almost a trepidatious statement for me to make, but I'm going to make it anyway, and that is if we look around us, we can see how we've been stigmatized with messages of fear from every arena, every paradigm in our existence, and not just nationally, but on a global scale, so much so that the other countries that you speak of, that, you know, Americans that have maybe not ever left their country, feel that their country is better than the others. Well, the idea is that every country, every citizen of every country in the world feels some sense of insecurity because of how they've been stigmatized by their fear conditioning. So the first step to lighten up is to eliminate fear from our formula of our lifestyle. And how do we do that? You know, the average person will tell me, well, fear serves a purpose. It's good for us. You know, we have to be mindful of fear and we have to use it as a gauge and maybe an overlay for experiences so that we can choose correctly.
Yeah, I'm hearing that a lot, especially this time of the year.
Here we're
towards the end of October, that whole thing.
There you go. And well, and not only that, the approaching, you know, Christian holidays and even other holidays that celebrate that have become so convoluted to where they're just capitalist holidays where people go out and buy a bunch of gifts and spend money and then feel regretful for it for the entire year afterwards. So the idea would be is, every individual can make a difference by simply focusing upon themselves first and foremost, without thinking of how our conditioning previously has said, well, that type of focus would be selfish. If we think of self-preservation as being a priority in our life, if we're preserving ourselves, then we can help others lighten up. And so if we can begin to engage in exercises and personal disciplines that help us to introspect rather than what I call extraspect, when we're looking out into our externalized world and we're seeing all the headlines about the terribly negative news that occurs on a daily basis everywhere, even down the street from where we live, not to mention the Middle East or some country in the world that we still hadn't even heard of before. Mm-hmm. The idea would be to narrow down and really bring our scope into self and realize that that's what grassroots is. That's starting at home base. And if we can make a difference that's positive and helps us to feel more satisfied or even fulfilled in our life, then what we transmit by way of our energetics is a model for others, and they will notice a difference, even if they don't know what specifically we're doing differently, to where they will aspire to lighten up as well. The other thing is to be kind and respectful of ourselves. So people that attract disrespect to them, to some degree, will typically be disrespectful of themselves. Maybe they'll be highly critical towards themselves and or others, perhaps. And so the idea would be to really rein in judgment to where we automatically have an unrealistic expectation of another person until we can really get a hold of, get our mind wrapped around our own self-judgment and learn how to control that better so that we're not way into the extreme with our self-criticism, because that really beats us down. And if we aren't good enough at it ourselves, we will have other people in our sphere of influence that help us with our criticism, not to mention our media, our society. So the idea would be to lighten up with our self-criticism and become more respectful of self so that we can then draw or attract to us respect from others, which teaches others through modeling the behavior just how much more comfortable and satisfying it is to live in that paradigm rather than the paradigm of fear that's saying you're not good enough, you're not beautiful enough, you're not thin enough, you're not rich enough, you're not smart enough. I just read an article in Scientific American Mind yesterday, and it was staggering, the statistics that they were speaking of about genius. and how it is that we have such a high population of genius in the nation over the last decade, which is true. But why do we have so much genius? Well, what they chalked it up to is because it's finally being noticed. Before, it was just men that would be focused upon for their genius because they were supported by a patriarchy that required the females in the society or culture to take on a more domestic duty to support the patriarchy so that the men could be implementing their genius and helping the world to be a better place. Well, the idea would be that there are just as many females in the world that are genius, but typically, first and foremost, they have a lot more duties on their schedule for the day or their life if they're looking at bearing children and raising a family, for instance, or becoming married and figuring out how to work the partnership with their mate if they're both professionals. But all in all, the numbers in that article did say, and I can't quote it precisely, but it's in the current issue of Scientific American Mind, is that really the statistics of female genius are even higher than male genius at this time, because women finally have reached a point where they're not allowing what the old society dictated of them to hold them back. And I remember when I was studying medicine at a very early age, I was one of very few women. Well, now women are the majority of medical students, at least in America. How about that?
Yeah.
But it should be that way because there's always been more women in the world than men. The female population has always been exponentially higher than the male because we're a procreation society where our biology is designed for reproduction. And so you have to have enough of the female genome that's viable to reproduce available. And you don't need as many as the male genome necessarily because they have more eggs and they last longer.
Right.
So lightening up is really the key, and we have to figure out what lightening up means to us, and then we just need to do it. We shouldn't wait, and we shouldn't look around to see what the right way or the wrong way is. We need to figure out what does it take to have a lighter mood. If we wake up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, we need to figure out why and what we can do to change that so that we don't make everybody else's parade that day rainy by sharing our bad mood with other people. That's an energy transmission. And anyone that's worked in an office space for a period of time knows all it takes is one person to come into that room and rain on everybody else's parade for the day.
It brings everybody else down.
Uh-huh.
There's no question about it. And I have always tried to be an optimist. You know, I guess it's the analogy is of the glass half full.
Well, it's healthy.
I am not a real fan of a lot of the stuff in the media these days that is supposed to elicit fear,
mm-hmm.
whether it be movies, television shows, especially the plethora of I'll put it into the category of zombies and vampires.
Sure.
It just does not appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have I watched these programs? Yes, I have, but it isn't. But I don't sit there in fear per se. I'm almost perplexed by why this is so intriguing to people that they need. It's almost like they need this, like they need to breathe, you know, in and out, you know, X number of times a minute. They need this stuff. Or then the movies that are coming out. I mean, mm-hmm. I was just flabbergasted when I saw this one movie coming out, Lincoln and Vampires.
Oh, I heard about that.
What
is
this? I'm trying to find, where's the connection between Abraham Lincoln, who freed the slaves, and vampires? I'm just not getting it. And that's fine. I don't want to get it.
I think we'll have to go see it to see if it's even worth it.
And I may not. It's one of those things where, you know, if somebody wants to go see it, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go watch Nemo,
mm-hmm.
and here's your ticket to go watch Lincoln and the Vampires, okay? Because it just... I think that when I went to see, for example, a movie that came out I can't remember how many years ago, The Blair Witch Project.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I watched this thing thinking it was actually real. I mm-hmm. figured somebody found this camera and they've edited it into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God, I can't believe these people are going through this. This is it's unbelievable. And then, of course, I was madder than a wet hen when I found out that it was a fraud. I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Really? As if we don't have enough to be afraid of in the real world, we've got to generate all of this. I, you know, and I don't understand it, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in understanding it any more than I can wrap my brain around one human being or a group, small group of human beings who think it's a good idea to control and manipulate other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
There have been other television programs where you see this happening.
Absolutely.
The television show Lost, for mm-hmm. example, which, yes, I did watch up to a point. Mm-hmm. It was like the first and second seasons. I was kind of into it thinking, okay, how are these guys going to resolve all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you find out that there's this other group of people that's doing the manipulating and going, wait a minute, you don't have the right to do this to other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of lost interest in Lost. but again, that's me. So I want to come back and talk more about Wendy McKenna and holistic healing, how you came to the place where you are today in doing the things that you're doing with the Global Alliance for Balance and Healing, and giving people maybe some guidance, giving them some direction as to how they can go about in their own little community, their own little world, in their own lives as individuals. Because one of the big dreams of this program is to take it around the world, not just broadcast it around the world, because that's already happening, but traveling around the world, meeting people who in other countries like you are trying to make a difference, who are saying, and I use the Occupy movement as mm-hmm. an example, who may not have a specific set of commandments or 10 things that they want to see changed, but basically they are saying, we have had enough of the old ways and things must change. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Sure do.
So we'll come back and we'll talk more about that. I'm talking with Wendy McKenna, and she is a holistic healer, and she is connected with the Global Alliance for Balance and Healing, and we are going to find out more about that as well as her connection, how she became involved in the healing arts, if you will. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Wendy McKenna. She is a holistic healer. Is it an holistic healer? I know that the rules in
usually
language—
usually the more correct verbiage,
yes, like
yeah.
an historian, an uh-huh. holistic— The H is what changes things, and I always find it interesting. I'm actually listening to commercials, the syntax
mm-hmm.
and so forth, and thinking— No, they didn't get that right. I didn't do really well in English in grade school, but I did really well in college. And it's the hardest language to learn because it has 65 different tenses.
It's true.
Unlike any other language on the planet. And yet there are certain rules that I do remember. I always have to go in my head and remember, okay, how is that word spelled? I before E, except after C, sometimes like
I
in
do
neighbor
the same
and
thing.
Way. And it's like, it's the only way. Although a friend of mine, speaking of the word friend, a friend of mine shared with me a great hook for the word friend in particular. He said, okay, just think of the abbreviation for Friday, F-R-I, and end, E-N-D. Bingo. Receive, I think I have that now. It's E-I, not I-E. But anyway, so you are a holistic healer and holistic healer. How has this been part of your life from childhood?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. A holistic healer is a title that's been phased out by the Federal Bureau of Professions. But I had what I didn't realize were gifts when I was a child, and have always been able to perceive information and in the energy of people and around them, mm-hmm. as well as around things. But I always had a knack of being able to see inside of people's bodies and even animals and plants to understand if there was an imbalance and therefore maybe a malady or maybe a condition that might need repair or some sort of resolution. And so in my younger years, I just thought it was natural. I thought how I operated was pretty natural, although people did request me to facilitate for them in certain ways. So in the beginning, from about age, I'd say probably 8, it was more just crops and livestock. I lived in a farming community, and so people knew that Wendy had a green thumb and a knack for animals. So if something was up or something wrong, they would call me and ask me questions to help them get insight on how they could maybe repair something or help a sick animal, cattle, horses, whatever, sheep, chickens. Or their crops. And I did work on a ranch, too, where we attended to crops and whatnot. So I learned a lot about farming at that time. But it also got me into a lot of trouble because I was also raised during a generation where it just wasn't acceptable to just open my mouth as a young child and tell people things that I knew, because most of those people were grown-ups and they felt that I had no warrant to know what it is that I knew, although it was pretty freaky for them. And many people that followed up on what I told them usually did discover that they had something they needed to rectify with their health or their body. And so I thought I was supposed to be a doctor, and I've always had guidance and teachers that are invisible to most people. My parents would have called them my imaginary friends, and they are still with me today, and if they're part of my imagination, so be it, but they help me a lot. And after many years, I did decide to start serving professionally, and that's when I had to begin to qualify for my title. So I am studied in you know, general allopathic medicine, but my field took more a turn into the field of holistic medicine so that I could get the education that was required of me in order to provide my services professionally. And always, though, from very early on, I knew that my service was designed to be helping humanity through a very critical phase of their evolution. Mm-hmm. And I was always told very clearly what I needed to do to train and study and the whole bit. So I was guided pretty well by some guidance that most people don't access. And so, as I mentioned, I started volunteering my service about 28 years before I started Global Alliance, because I did notice that I could help people. And when I helped them, they learned how to help themselves better, and then they would share what they learned with other people, rather than sharing with those other people, oh, well, Ambien worked great for me, you ought to try that, and oh, Celexa, I really needed it, I was too depressed, I had to be medicated. I've seen this for 41 years, where people are turning to pharmaceuticals and quicker fixes, when really, that isn't the answer, because all of those medications just dumb us down. We have such a capacity for genius and inspiration, but yet the pharmaceuticals that most people take unnecessarily. Now, there are necessary reasons for them as well, and I believe there's a time and a place for conventional medicine, but a lot of folks take pharmaceuticals unnecessarily for far too long, and it really does impede their ability to have quality of life.
Yeah. I knew a woman back in Phoenix. I worked with her, and found out that she was taking 9 different medications, mm-hmm. and 6 or 7 of them were for the side effects of the first 2.
Absolutely.
And so as soon as she went to another doctor and they went through the list and they started knocking these things off, her health miraculously improved. It was incredible.
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's very staggering statistics of death to overdose on pharmaceuticals from people that just don't know any better. And they've taken one too many of their medications and mixed them at the wrong time. So, you know, there are fatal results from that. So fortunately, your friend discovered what was necessary and got out from under that anchor, because that's basically what it is.
It is indeed. And there were other things. There were other circumstances as well that were part of the issue. But I know that when, for example, I shared with you a condition that I'm dealing with, and which is, for the most part, pretty much healed. I mean, I'm walking pretty much normally. Mm-hmm. My right knee, I bruised it at the beginning of October. It swelled up to the point where, and this seemed to go on for 2 and 3 weeks, which, of course, it did, where I actually had to use a cane to walk around. I was actually given the parking space closest to the back door of the station so that I wouldn't have to walk as far, which was quite nice. I don't have to do that anymore. But I just accepted it as part of the process for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That this is just what my body does. Mm-hmm. Like when I get a cold, if I were to get some kind of respiratory thing, first I get the sore throat, and then it goes up into my nasal passages, and I get the drainage, and then the sore throat's still there, and then it goes into my chest, turns into congestion, and I cough it out, and then I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the process. My immune system. I'm not taking anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the most that I would, that I do now, is I have my wife actually make for me a hot toddy.
Oh, very good.
The equivalent of NyQuil.
Sure, I was going to say.
Knock myself out, okay, so that my body can mm-hmm. rest and heal,
mm-hmm.
and I hopefully will wake up in the next morning feeling a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've had situations where I have worked consecutive days in a row where my body finally said, you know what, we're shutting down. And I actually ended up taking 3 days off from work, which in this business, you just don't do.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there's nobody to cover for you.
Sure.
But I was very fortunate at that particular period. So now I'm more conscious of my work schedule and saying, okay, I've got somebody who can cover these little spots here to where at least I can have in a 7 day period, 1 day off.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Okay. Whereas before it was consecutive 21 and 28 days, and then the body says, no more. No, we're not playing this.
So you've lightened up by 1 day a week.
By 1 day a week.
There you go. You could aspire to more in the future.
And sometimes I will get two, uh-huh. a Saturday, Sunday. But the point is that I started listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to think I always have been. I share this story that when I was a kid, I had the flu, or flu-like, what have you, and I was laying in bed. And I was young enough, I was still with my folks and my family. And my sister and my mother were standing over me. And I was laying there and I was moaning. And to which my sister said, Mom, make him stop. He sounds terrible. And she said, no, that's how he heals himself. Mm-hmm. And I encourage people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you what tone, because your body will tell you what tone to moan. And it may fluctuate up and down. But I think that those vibrations, those frequencies are part of that process.
You're correct. You're correct. And with the moan, you figure it's a release mechanism, right? Just like a release valve to where whatever was pent up within needed to be released.
Mm.
So the idea would be that if we're lightening up to raise our vibration and we want to aspire or restore optimum health and well-being, there are so many other tools we can use. In addition to you resting, which is, you know, that's critical. The average American, especially Californian, because of the pace of life that we maintain.
Yeah.
You know, most Californians, because of the, you know, the low employment opportunities and whatnot, a lot of my clients now I'm hearing that, you know, there's no more sick time that they get at their jobs, and vacation time has been really limited to where they feel really pressured to be on the job, even if they're sick. But we have to change that. The whole idea would be the individual has to come to terms with that. And if their body is saying, I need a break right now, you know, come on, give me a break. Otherwise, I'm going to shut down on you by tomorrow. We have to be discerning enough to recognize that and take action rather than allowing someone else or an institution or entity dictate how we're going to take care of ourselves. And unfortunately, every day that passes here forward, we're stepping further into a society or culture of that, because we are not making decisions for ourselves. We've allowed too many other people to make decisions for us, including our doctors, to a point of where we believe what they say as if it's gospel without researching or getting other opinions. However, I can say that in the last decade, what I'm very pleased by is many of my clientele that come in, even if it's someone that comes to see me for the first time, and I'm kind of like the last way station. So they get to me after they've exhausted all of other avenues.
Yeah.
They are seeking other opinions. They are asking questions, and they'll even share stories with me about how they were lectured and maybe a finger wagged at them a few times by whomever they were questioning, because that whomever it was thought that they were maybe an authority figure over them. But the idea would be is we have to take our life into our own hands, and if we do that, then we can prove to ourselves that we can treat each other the way we were intended to be living on Earth, and that is compatibly and harmoniously without harboring anger and greed and power-mongering and war-mongering to the degree that we're literally committing some form of genocide just by actively thinking about how much we hate other cultures in the world. The idea would be there's an energy transmission. If people were following physics, which is the fundamental platform of our existence, they would see that those transmissions are just like throwing darts at people, places, and things. It's just like sending a missile out to them. And if there's a collective group of humanity that all believes the same and they're targeting one particular individual or one particular culture, eventually that transmission will reach the destination and inflict harm upon them in some way. I'm not saying that it's going to be like shooting a gun at them, but the idea would be it's insidious. These transmissions are insidious, and we are responsible for them. Just like you said, the tax dollars that bailed out the airlines and the automotive industry and then the banks.
The banks. Mm-hmm.
You know, why would we do that? And the bottom line is, since we did, the idea would be we don't want to repeat those choices.
Right.
By engaging a collective group, a collective consciousness of humanity, be it Americans, thinking the only way we're going to survive is if we keep our banks in business. Well, our banks don't care about us. They could care less about us. They just want to stay in business. They're doing business with lots of other nations in addition to the U.S. So the idea would be we have to take that power back to ourselves and think about ourselves and how to maintain levity rather than density. So what I've been teaching a lot lately in my courses is about how this is a time to seek levity. If it means lightening up your body, so be it. If it means lightening up your thoughts or your language, for instance, when I hear, of course, I'm guilty of it at times as well, but when I hear one of my adult children express something like with a cuss word or whatever, I find that I'm going back to the mom role and I'm saying, imagine the import of energy that just went out with that word. And what do you want to do with it? Where do you want it to go? Because maybe there's someone that's very offended by that word in your midst when you express it. How do you think they feel? And did you mean to harm them with your word? So I remind people of their words and their body language, their posturing, their actions, and then they begin to look at their choices and how they can change their choices rather than choosing out of desperation, because we have been taught and conditioned again by our society to choose out of desperation. Or don't even make a choice. Procrastinate until the 11th hour and then look at the theme and make a decision. Well, what kind of a decision is that going to be? Not very discerning, right?
Yeah. You know, I have learned from a very early period in my career that words have power.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this time and time again. And growing up in my career around religious people who would talk about how powerful the word is. Not only the word when they spoke in the context of the book that they got those words from, but mm-hmm. also the individual words that we use and we communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see the political process unfold in these various campaigns, whether it be a presidential cycle or otherwise. And I remember using, you know, going through the process in my own mind and verbalizing it out loud, that, okay, outside my head and verbalizing it to others, that you have this process that goes on. And in this case, we're only talking about two major parties, but I know that there are more than that are vying for these positions. And you have the primary process. And so everybody is just saying whatever they want to say about the other guy and the other gal and on and on and on and on and on. And then you have the election and then a certain group of people win and say, okay, now let's join ranks. Let's join hands, sing kumbaya. Let's move forward to defeat the other guys. And the process repeats itself. And then we have the general election. And then we have the winners. And then we have the same thing. Let's join hands and hearts, sing kumbaya, and let's move forward together to create a greater civilization, a greater society. And it's like, well, wait a minute. But what about all of those words that you said about these other guys that you're now wanting to have embrace you? You're the winner. Didn't you mean what you said when you said them? Oh, it's just politics. I'm not buying that.
It's air pollution.
I'm not buying that explanation on any level from any of the institutions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. Either words have power or they don't have power. As the old analogy goes, either you're pregnant or you're not pregnant.
That's
you're not
right.
A little.
Mm-hmm.
So if these individuals continue to do this, it just seems to me, and you use the term air pollution, But it seems to me like these processes, in spite of how laudable and noble they seem to be, because we're doing it and we're doing it better than any other country on the planet in terms of allowing our citizenry to choose, that it seems as though we're doing more harm than good. That the ends do not justify the means.
Good for you for expressing that. I hope lots of people hear your statement, because we have to think about that. We interview in Global Alliance. We have many, many projects that we focus on, and one of them is the new humanity. And we interview people we have over the last decade, children. If they're talking comfortably with language by 18 months, we start interviewing them at 18 months. Usually between 18 months and about 6 years old is when we get really pure, authentic answers to our questions. And one of them is, especially since this is more common now, to maybe a 3 to 6 year old, you know, how come you're not talking very much? You know, your parents have wanted you to put you in with a speech pathologist. Your school doesn't want you to come back because you're refusing to participate with words. You know, why aren't you talking? Because we know that these children can speak. They've been exposed to the language since their birth. So yeah, we have the ability in our brain to replicate that even without practicing. So most of them tell us that the words hurt. I've heard this term or this statement from children over and over again for the last 10 years, that the words literally hurt. And it's because they're so pure and fresh in this world, and they're still assimilating everything they need to from their environment so that they can learn how to navigate as a human being in this life. And regardless of, you know, belief systems, of which there are many in our world, I do believe that we come back around over and over and over again. If there is a scope of eternity, then that would basically mean what eternity is. We keep having experiences, you know, eternally. And so these children talk about how the words hurt. And then they remind me of something that I know already, because I am still very telepathic. And that is that with all their peers, they communicate with them all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's telepathy, and they come in with that. It's a more advanced form of communication than speaking words. And they're so good at it, and they're communicating with all of the other children in their midst, that it's not concerning to them to be communicating to the people that use words that hurt. And so that's always been especially challenging to me, to help them understand, because here we live in a society where words are expected. And yet they feel reluctant to express themselves because they don't want to start playing the game of using words that hurt. And of course, with every word that hurts them comes a tone inflection or an energy transmission of maybe force or resistance. And so young children understand the physics of our existence. If we think about how we keep pushing at something, it's going to keep pushing back at us. Mm-hmm. Just like two repelling magnets, there's no way to get them to come together, because they will continually push against each other. So we have to learn a path that is free of resistance in order to attract to us anything that we would desire to experience. And children know this. They know it instinctually. They will surrender and become passive, even in a passive state of activity if they need to, in order to make a point and succumb to whatever pressure is pushing against them, just so that they don't have to exert energy unnecessarily to resist against the pressure. And that was going on for quite a while. Now we see, you know, if one in every five kids are autistic now, and how they know that before they're in puberty, I have no idea, because we're really narrowing our margins for diagnostics. But this is our new human race. This is a genome that has a brain that is just amazing and just barely awakening. But now they're demonstrating other behaviors like Asperger's and Tourette's, where they're explosively expressing what they need to get it out, because it hurts so much to keep it inside. And the only reason they're behaving that way is because their initial environment when they arrived here in those really critical early developmental years taught them to put up and shut up.
Yeah.
And they reached a point where they just couldn't put up and shut up anymore, because they were holding it all inside of them, and they had to get it out to alleviate themselves of what they were feeling inside. And then it becomes a demonstrated behavior there forward.
It was bullying that I grew up with in grade school, in particular. Some in high school, and of course, it was non-existent in college. And I remember interviewing someone, and we were talking about this issue. And some of the news stories that we were hearing about this, parents and teachers, of course, certainly were troubled by it. But there were some parents who would make the statement, well, this is just the way kids are, and they'll grow out of it, and you know, it, you know, this is part of what helps to build character in kids, you know,
sure,
so on and so forth. And it brought to mind a biblical passage. Train a child up in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, that's double-edged. That has a double meaning to it.
You bet it does.
And I'm going to let our listeners figure out what the double meanings are. But what I'm going to in terms of my point here is that if it's as these kids grow up into adulthood and they continue this process, we have laws against this kind of behavior. It can be called assault and battery, because in bullying in school, sometimes there is physical contact. And yet the parents will say, well, this is just the way kids are. Now, I was watching a program and they were talking about this subject of bullying. This was maybe 5 or 7 years ago. And I thought, oh my God, are they still dealing with that? We haven't grown up and taught our kids something, because I hadn't associated myself with any schools. I have no children. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't had to deal with that. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If adults carry out this same behavior, there are laws against this. So, and you're expecting your children to quote unquote grow out of this? It's not going to happen. And so it's one of those things that is so perplexing to me that people are not making the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's a wonderful old song from the 60s, Teach Your Children Well.
Sure.
And it just flabbergasts me. I'm almost at a loss for words to describe the level of frustration, because it's accepted in children but not in adults.
Right.
If you're going to accept it in adults, then you must accept it in children. If you're not going to accept it in adults, you cannot accept it in children.
It's so true, but I think a lot of parents, you know, no one ever created a manual for raising kids. And even if a manual were created, it would be totally obsolete by the time you had your children or I had mine, because the idea would be it's a unique experience. But I think it's only recently that there are more and more books and more teachers out, at least in the U.S., in our nation, helping young adults recognize the important role of a parent. Because the bottom line is our behavior is learned. It really is. I mean, unless we come in with certain gifts and something that's natural, like telepathy, for instance, the rest of it is learned. So we learn from our environment. We're sponges. We're assimilating all of the details, all the minutiae with what we can, so that we can learn how to operate in this environment. And so most parents don't realize that pretty much everything they execute or demonstrate as behavior is being assimilated by their children, even when they're not in their physical presence. And so is their teachers and their neighbors and the neighbor children's parents and the person that works at the post office and the grocery store and the gas station, depending on how often the children are exposed to those people at a young age. And so it's all learned. And again, it all falls back in the laps of us. We are responsible as a society or a human race,
right,
to recognize that. Yeah, we can't have a double standard to where it's okay for kids to beat up on each other as children, but once they become, like in the U.S., for instance, or in the U.S., 18 years of age, then all of a sudden they're a legal adult and they're on their own. And if they've been allowed to behave that way for all of those years, there's no way they're going to be able to turn that around as a young adult in a world as it is today.
And take that to another level. Consider the corporate heads of major companies in this country in particular who were bullies as children, and now they have been taught, and they've been taught to view their lessers, their inferiors, in the same context.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the even though I know a little bit about what really is going on within the oil industry in particular, still the example I think is valid. And I ask the question of the corporate heads, when would you charge your mother, daughter, sister, brother, father, grandfather, $7-$8 a gallon for gasoline, $10 for a loaf of, would you do that to your own family? Just because the whole point of business is making money? You would do this to your own family? And think about this on a broader perspective. We are your family.
Mm-hmm.
There is no separation. We're all connected. And it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the program in terms of the things that we say, the energy that we send out. It's eternal.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where it's going unless we, with intent, choose to send it
right
to a particular place.
It's if everyone could just do that, imagine how the world would be different. And, you know, I fall back, too, on the whole idea or concept of telepathy. If two people in the world, as a result of hearing this interview today, decide to practice between themselves, sending messages that they're just thinking or feeling within them, long distance to someone that's willing to try to retrieve those messages on the other end and create kind of like a volley back and forth of communication, I can guarantee that they would reach a point where they would be communicating that way. We all do that already mm-hmm. to some degree. You know, the phone rings and you know who it is before you lift up the phone. How often does that happen? Well, now we have caller ID, so it doesn't really work as well now.
Sure.
But, you know, 15 years ago before we had that, you know.
But think about it. Even if you just think it.
Mm-hmm. There you
As a man thinketh, so is he.
That is
You see
true.
The caller ID.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's calling. Oh, my. I don't want to talk to this person.
And now, you've already conversed with them.
Right. Even though we have the freedom of discrimination.
It's true.
I mean, and then there's nothing illegal about that.
Mm-hmm.
I have the right to choose to surround myself with mm-hmm. the kinds of people
mm-hmm.
that are either going to lift me up, support me in my dreams and my aspirations, or I have the freedom to choose to surround myself with people who are going to keep me down.
Right.
That there's nothing wrong. There's nothing illegal or immoral or unethical about that. It's just the same as I want to live by the ocean.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to be reminded of that, isn't it? You know, as restrictive as our lifestyles seem to be because of regulations and laws and rules and ordinances and whatnot that we have to comply with on a daily basis, ultimately mm-hmm. we have the freedom of choice, and that's why we're here living on this planet as human beings.
Mm.
And we also have the choice to evolve. And if we want to evolve, we have to lighten up, you know, as we've been discussing. We have to let go of the burden of density, anything that, like you say, wants to hold us down and shackle us to a static position. We're not designed to be static. Even our bodies, having so many joints in our body, they're designed to move all the time. Even when we're sleeping, we roll in our bed or we flip or we end up at the other end or whatever, because our bodies are designed to be moving. And that therefore, our existence is a mobile existence. And I'm not implying being a nomad necessarily, unless a person is attracted to that lifestyle. The idea would be we cannot put our heads in the sand and we cannot drive our heels into the mud.
Yeah.
We need to continue to move forward. And the best way to get into the next moment is to really be cognitive of the now moment and forget all of what was past, because if we choose anything to hold on to that we're attached to in our past, we drag that forward with us,
yeah.
and it only burdens us further.
I had a very interesting exchange about a month ago with my father. Now, they came out to California to visit, to do some vacationing. I said, hey, you know, you guys are going to be down in this area, so I'll tell you what, we'll come down and we'll meet you someplace for dinner. We'll buy dinner and just sit and chat and catch up like we used to do when we lived in Phoenix. Great. Okay, super. And things were going great. just having a great afternoon, evening there at the restaurant and just enjoying each other's company, talking about what's going on and how life is and this and that and the other. And near the end of the evening, I brought up two things. I actually brought up this concept in politics, and some people say, "Oh, that's your first mistake." And it was more along the lines of just sharing with my dad, you know how they, you know, they said back in the 80s, you know, when Reagan was running the first time, you know, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And I would respond to whoever the politician was, doesn't matter the party, the beliefs or paradigms. I said, well, I'm either better off or I'm worse off than I was 4 years ago, but it had nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. That it had to do with me and the choices that I made and the people that I surrounded myself with. Well, I didn't quite get to that last part of it when I got this barrage of negativity, mm-hmm. and that it wasn't just me, and so on. And what was interesting was I did not receive that as if it were from my father to me, the child. I was putting stuff out on the table for the conversation. That's all I was doing. And I got this reaction. I thought, okay, we will stop this and we won't go there. You know, I tried to explain and so on and so forth. So I went into another piece of conversation about something else. And again, a similar reaction. And I thought, wow, okay. You know, I'm just putting it on the table. Again, I didn't change my energy. Mm-hmm. My whole point was, I'm just putting this on the table. Mm-hmm. And now my father and I have talked about it since, and he has since apologized for his reaction, which in a way I didn't really feel like he needed to, mm-hmm. because I didn't take it in that context, but I appreciated it and I thanked him for it. And it was really funny too, because in the process of thanking him, I wanted to go into an explanation of why. And three words came out, and I stopped myself. Thanks. I really appreciate that, Dad. Thank you. And I thought—
You knew you went as far as you could with
it. I didn't need to go any further.
Sure.
This wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. This was about him.
Well, and when we're faced off with a response like that in a person, no matter how close we are to them, that's usually an indication to us of what it is that they fear.
Yeah.
So that's how fear expresses itself. And, you know, to imply that any individual is responsible for what's occurring in the world is a pretty difficult challenge for some people to swallow. You know, it's beyond what they can fathom, because they think of everything else happening outside of them. And it's happened, you know, because of that person or that situation or that place or that culture or that belief system, when really we're in it together. And that's why, you know, the most sacred teachings for the human race have been love, mm-hmm. acceptance, surrender, you know, surrender your sword and shake the hand. The idea is that we've got to reconnect. And we talked about, you mentioned media earlier. So if people look around them and they see what's in our media is always a preparatory medium. We know that with TV, you know, gosh, as early as the 60s, there were always the subliminal messages that were incorporated into what was being viewed on the monitor, although we didn't even have that term then.
Right.
So there's always been this preparatory type of dynamic incorporated into our media. Well, our media now in our movies, and I don't really watch TV, but occasionally I'll pick something up when I'm traveling. And now we're being prepared to be thinking about off-planet again, because we have the Mars rover up there. And, you know, we just retired the shuttle, but yet we have other programs, including the Russian space station and whatnot.
And private individuals.
All private enterprise, yeah. So the idea is we're now being prepared for off-planet mindset. And yet there's still the fear tactics. Be afraid enough to not move too far forward with your own responsibility, because we can still take care of you, whoever we is, you know, the United Nations or your government or your community or your municipality. But the idea is that all of those entities, those government agencies or even corporate agencies, industries, they're all in bed together, and the idea would be that really they're only focusing on their own best interests, not the individual. whether it be the consumer, the citizen, or the resident. So we have to be responsible for every choice we make, and we have to recognize the influence it has on the larger picture, you know, the exponential influence it has on the human race or the culture. And more people, though, I'm happy to say, are recognizing the importance of this, because I travel all over and teach this, and the numbers of people are growing so rapidly right now because people want to step out from under what they feel they've been pressured beneath. They want to feel a greater sense of liberty, but not in the way we were taught liberty was. You know, our entire definition of liberty is pretty dysfunctional.
Yes, it is.
Especially for the people that still think we live in a democracy after 2011.
Or even think that we live in a republic.
Yeah.
Some people still think we live in a republic.
Oh, yeah. And I, you know, I've taken up a stand this year in 2012. Every class that I've taught this year, every workshop and every lecture I've given, I've always suggested, even if it isn't pertinent to the theme I'm sharing, I've suggested to people, please go back, go online. You can go to the United States Constitution and read the original document.
Yeah.
And then read all the rewrites and read the current document. And then go to the United Nations Constitution. It's online too, and read that. And then compare it with what other constitutions in the world exist that is a mirror reflection of the UN Constitution. And that will give Americans a real clear idea of where we're positioned.
Yeah.
We're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. So the only way to get out of a rock and a hard place is to assume responsibility for oneself and move forward.
I hear the term living document when they talk about the Constitution. Well, if it is indeed a living, breathing document, as a living, breathing organism, as each one of us is, we didn't stay infants.
That's right.
We didn't stay children. We didn't stay adolescents. We didn't stay 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You know, we are growing and changing and evolving through the process of the experiences that we're having, the education that we're going through, and so on and so forth. And so it's one of those things where if in fact we're going to use that term to describe that or anything else, then there must be, it seemed to me, there must be some room to allow this to happen. I mean, okay, you have the Constitution and the first 10 amendments are the original document, the Bill of Rights, but we still have another 17 amendments to that Constitution and Bill of Rights. So apparently down through history, over the last 225 or 30 or however many years old we are, people have thought, you know, we need to make some adjustments. We need to make some shifts and moves and changes, you know. So it is very interesting. Before we wrap up the program, I want to have you describe for us a little bit more about what it is that you do when people come to you. Obviously, searching the internet, hearing about you on a program such as this, they'll Google Wendy McKenna or the Global Alliance for Balance and Healing and so forth and so on. And they like what you have to say. They just don't know where to start. So they come to you, they get in touch with you, and then what happens?
Well, thank you. Really, I'm here to represent Global Alliance for Balance and Healing today because I am the founder and the president of the organization. When people come to see me for my private services, that's just like scheduling an appointment with a doctor, although I'm a healer, so I focus on helping people how to heal the source rather than just address symptomology. And I also provide a wide variety of more complementary approaches, herbal and natural medicines rather than pharmaceuticals, alternatives to surgery, other types of therapeutics and whatnot. But with Global Alliance, our theme is to teach humanity how to restore their energetic balance and how to maintain that. So we provide energy balancing clinics, and all of our service is free of charge, by the way. I think I forgot to mention that earlier. We knew that we had to schedule our services free of charge so that anyone in the world could access it, rather than it being limited and then somewhat restricted, because the type of services that we provide, if we were to look back during the, probably about 1,300 years ago, and since then, it would be only the elite that could access these services because they could afford to, and that also kept them in the loop of maintaining more optimum health and well-being, to where the lesser people that they saw as lesser than them were more subject to illness and disease and discomfort, and therefore dumbed down enough to where they couldn't be as viable in their world because they were struggling with illnesses or injuries.
And death.
Yes, and an earlier death than the elite even. Mm-hmm. So the idea would be that in addition to an energy balancing session, which we do a clinic for free every month in San Luis Obispo City, and then we're on the road usually every month at least once to an outlying community that invites us. We only drive to the western and interior of the United States at this time since 3 years ago when the economy really started to decline because charities just aren't getting much donations anymore. But we also provide a service called the Project of Light, and that's an extension of our service that we've provided over the last 2 years in addition to the energy balancing. And that is designed to activate the human pineal gland within their brain so that they are activating more of their DNA for the ascension phase of our evolution, which is basically what humanity is in the midst of right now. And in addition to that, we have free community outreach programs every month. We teach people how to pineal tone. We teach them how to use the fundamental concepts of energetics. And then we have different facilitators from all walks of life, the justice arena, law enforcement, public safety, public education, healing arts for sure, medicine. And these folks come in and teach free programs from their background to help mainstream folks learn how to manage their energetic balance. When we travel on the road, we respond to invitations. And so we call those host communities when we leave our own backyard. And we will travel to those locations, and our host has secured a facility. And then we come and we provide our clinics. Those are usually promoted within the communities that we visit well ahead of time. And we typically will serve anywhere from 100 to 300 people at one clinic. And beyond that, we are full up. That's how busy we are. We're booked up through January of 2013 already. And this last quarter of the calendar year is always the busiest for us because the holidays bring in a lot of people that are sick and not feeling well and possibly near passing, because this is a very popular time of year for people to pass on. And so we find that we're donating quite a bit more of our service during this time, and more so this year than any year in the previous 11 years.
You think this has anything to do with 2012?
I think it has a lot to do with it. People are more
fear that's been generated.
Yeah, I think they're more fearful. They're a lot of people are worried about maybe this being Armageddon, or some people are waiting for the rapture. Other people are waiting for the Earth to be aligned with a black hole in the middle of our solar system, as Greg Braden talks about the fractal time.
Right.
To where we're aligned with other dimensions. Who knows what will happen? I prefer just to wait, because if there's anything I know about now, I know that I can't take what I know now into then ahead, because the idea would be that we're creating anew. The idea or concept of this phase of our evolution would speak to how it is that we've arrived at a point to where we are truly the creators of the new experience that is yet to come. And so we need to be conscientious and responsible and respectful creators, and we need to inject our creation with love. So we teach people how to love themselves, and we have a wide variety of different programs that help them with that. And beyond that, they can look for us on YouTube and also think about our wisdom series. We will be promoting our wisdom series 2013 throughout the entire state of California. Mm-hmm. This year, we just promoted it on the central coast of California. And that's the way that we make the funding in order to be able to travel to people. We don't require our hosts pay for anything. They just invite us and get a facility for us to use. And we pay for all of the costs of providing our service. And like this time of year, when we're pretty much out of money, all of our healers on our team are paying for it out of their pocket if they have to. So we're very dedicated. So the Wisdom Series is www.thewisdomseries.org. And you can see who our speakers were for this year. And we don't have our new speakers confirmed yet for 2013, but we will by the end of this year. So they'll be on the website as well very soon. Or you can also look at our most informative medium, and that is our Global Alliance website. And that's www.globalalliance.ws, WS for World Service. Hmm. So before the economy started declining, we were providing service in the U.S., the U.K., parts of Western Europe, Switzerland, France and Germany, as well as Canada and the Northwest Territories. But we've had to scale down since the economic decline because America's not the only nation that's experiencing economic decline.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult for charities to operate. And whereas we used to get discounts on our airfares, that doesn't happen anymore. So we can only drive to our destinations.
Right.
And we've been known to drive 3,000 miles to one clinic, and we probably would again. But it all depends on just how busy we are and how available we are. But we do invite people to email us and also look at our website, and we'll have many YouTube videos up before the year end. We've been very busy producing YouTube videos to share with people. So everything we talk about here and even some of our programs we're now filming so we can get that out to more of humanity in the world since we can't get to them in person.
Who is Wendy McKenna?
I'm just a human being. I'm a mom, born and raised in California. I've lived in different parts of the world, and I've traveled the world except for the Middle East, all through my adult life serving. I feel that I'm a servant to humanity and an agent for balance.
And what do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I intend to achieve sharing balance with as many members of the human race as possible, because I know what the product brings. I've seen so many people restore their lives to a level of satisfaction that eventually brings them fulfillment. And I don't know about anybody else. I hear stories every day, but right now there's no one else here telling a story except you and I. So you, Richard, I can tell that you love your life. There may be some challenges, but all in all, you're transmitting a deep satisfaction with your life and even a love of it. I love my life, too, and I love being here. I love the earth. I love our natural environment, being outdoors, because in California we have pretty much
lots
any experience we could ask for, and there is lots of it. So I intend to continue to share balance no matter at what cost and what it takes, because I only feel better afterwards. So how could I not want to do what it is that I'm here to do? And I've always felt very ambitious and dedicated to my service without even knowing how to provide it as a child. But I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know it well, but every day I learn something new from the people I interact with. But if I see evidence of balance in them, then I know that there's hope for the human race, and I know there's hope for the earth.
Mm-hmm.
There is no hope if we do not restore our balance.
Well, I encourage people to get in touch with you through your websites, again, globalalliance.ws, and you can also call 888-567-3800, 888-567-3800, and also that other website was the Wisdom Teaching Series.
The Wisdom Series.org. Yeah.
We encourage people to check out you, your website, and get more information. We are linked to you as well, to the website that you have, and we encourage people to check it out. Also, I want to let you know that if you have to leave the radio show, there's more of this interview on A2Zen.fm. And if you have to leave the A2Zen.fm radio program, there is more to this interview. So go to the archives, listen to the interview. It is over an hour in length. We encourage you to check that information out and check out Wendy McKenna's website and her information as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices, lots of them, and hopefully you're not overwhelmed. Take it one bite at a time and you'll be just fine. I'm Richard Dugan. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to all.